Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
People use the word trope a lot in replace of the word cliche. Cliche is the bad word. Cliche is, this is vapid. It's been done before. It's not providing anything new. It's specious. It looks good on the outside, but really I've seen this a million times, done better a million times. Trope, every story you've ever read uses tropes. The Prophecy, for example.
Yeah.
You're saying that trope can be done incredibly, or it could seem cliche.
Everyone hears the Nazis and goes like, oh, Nazis, awful, terrible. Of course.
Avoid at all costs.
Avoid at all costs.
Of course, that is true.
That is
very true.
Don't try and clip me.
Don't go Nazis on us. Nazis bad.
Nazis bad. However.
Welcome back, everybody, to another Two to Ramble episode. I am one of your hosts, Austin.
And I'm your other host, Richard.
And Richard, you are not the chosen one.
No, clearly. Well, some would say I am.
Ooh.
See, you did all this prep and work to actually come today, and I did no prep or work, and yet I'm still equally a part of this. Some would say that's the chosen one right there.
It's like you're the protagonist of the story who just gets fumbled into this new adventure. And exactly. I am the mentor character, which introduces you to destiny.
You're the strong rival that does all the hard work and effort to like climb your way to the top.
And push you
but
down.
But I was blessed with genetic gifts from God that allow me to be the main character.
How can
story.
You say that with your hair?
Yeah, that hurts. But it's true. But here's the thing. God may have, you know, cursed me a little bit with growing hair on top of my head, but did bless me with a decent beard.
He did, and he cursed me with no beard.
I've seen your goatee. It's a little sad.
It's a little pathetic.
It's a little sad.
I've tried growing it out, and it gets more pathetic.
It's a little scraggly.
It is. So we're talking about Chosen One tropes today. Actually, this is the beginning of a series we're going to do, and you can see we have it titled Trope Deep Dive, The Chosen One. We're kind of going to go through tropes that we like, dislike, every trope we can eventually.
By the way, a complete ripoff of Sarcastic Productions. Red versus Blue. Love their channel. They're wonderful. Go check them out.
But
absolutely. If you're curious, I'm like, hey, that looks a little similar. Yes, it is.
If you want a condensed down, way more informative version of what we're doing, we're going to talk for an hour and see where this leads us. Whereas you can get a 15-minute, very precise, very succinct, very intelligent discussion. Not discussion, it's a monologue from Sarcastic Productions.
Mm-hmm.
They're fantastic. Check them out. So we're kind of just going through all these tropes. And the first one we picked out was the chosen one, because we have to choose the chosen one first.
Oh, yeah. So many of our favorite things have the chosen one trope in them.
Well, like what? Some books? Wheel of Time, your favorite thing.
Wheel of Time, Red Rising,
Harry Potter,
now, Stormlight Archive.
Before we get too loose.
Stormlight Archive, not as much.
Yeah, before we get too loose with our definition, because Dune's definitely one.
Oh, 100%.
Paul Atreides is your chosen one.
Sun Eater. Definitely chosen.
Anakin Skywalker, Star Wars, your big ones. But you name something like Red Rising, or some people would say Lord of the Rings. So the definition of chosen one, we have to be careful with what we're saying here. I'll just read off this definition and then be careful we're not muddying the waters. Because today, this is a lesson today. We're going to learn more about the chosen one trope. We're going to see why do authors use it. Why? What are the pros and cons too? Because there's some things that are great why authors decide to write this trope. And some that end up with some muddying waters and end up a little bit too cliche.
I think nowadays in the zeitgeist, it's used more as a negative or con of like, oh yeah, that's the chosen one trope. Most people seem to not like it when referenced it.
I think people
like it when they actually watch or read it.
Yeah.
But when talking about it, I don't think people like the trope itself.
I'm going to be here to defend it.
Great.
Stalwartly, because I'm going to defend all these tropes, also presenting some cons and seeing what you think, because
putting me in the nice neg- okay, I'll tear it to shreds.
Your favorite book ever.
Even my favorite. Yeah, no, I'm going to rip it to shreds.
We'll do it. I think you'll have a tough time when we get into the details of this because it has some of your favorite story elements. Well, first,
I'm great at being a devil's advocate. That's where my niche. My favorite part about conversations is realizing what someone's position is and then whether I agree with them or not, deliberately take the opposite. Just for fun.
Maybe you're not the chosen one. You are the chosen ones, that teacher in the academy that the chosen one has to get beyond. You're the mean teacher.
I'm the Professor Snape.
Professor Snape because he has good intentions by the end.
And great hair.
Yeah. So you're no Professor Snape. He's a god among men. You're Professor Snake.
Oh, okay.
You're a little slithery, little sneaky, conniving, like, oh, I don't want the protagonist to propel in their journey.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, I just like getting in the way. It's fun for me.
Well, we were going to say the definition. Here's a definition of Chosen One trope. It says, the Chosen One is a narrative trope in which a character is destined to be a hero or, emphasis on or, anti-hero of a story due to fate, unique gifts, or special lineage. The character is often the protagonist and is in charge of saving the world or society, and is popular in books, TV shows, movies, and some of them, as we mentioned, Percy Jackson, Harry Potter, Dune, Star Wars, Wheel of Time, Avatar: The Last Airbender, badass. So many, and you can even see little archetypes in that of stories that aren't focused on the Chosen One trope, but still have elements of it, because you mentioned, so I'm like, hey, Red Rising, tossing that one out there. I do want to distinguish between the Chosen One trope and then just a hero's journey, because mm-hmm. there's a big difference there. A lot of Chosen One tropes will follow the hero's journey plot archetype, which you know what that mm-hmm. is, right? The hero's journey archetype?
Yeah, the 12 basic steps, and I'll start off of a snapshot of what the world is like and how the character is before the adventure, and then journeying all the way through, like, the decision to action, then going to Darkest Night of the Soul, then crawling your way back up, and then finally the end is you see where they are before. Like, after their journey, they're back in the same place, and how have they changed?
Kumbaya.
I cut out a lot of the steps
in
there.
I'll fill in, like, one piece of that pie of just, you know, you're in your little town, your farmhouse, your farm boy. There's a call to adventure. They reject the adventure. But a mentor comes and presents them why they have to go on this journey. There's some self-discovering actualization, and then by the end, they return home, completely changed. Like that typical hero's journey. Yeah. But then in that, it's easy to fill in the Chosen One trope with that, because the Chosen One is specifically, it doesn't just mean protagonist, because a lot of protagonists out there aren't necessarily the one to save the world, the Chosen One. They're your hero. A hero doesn't necessarily mean they're a Chosen One.
Sure. For the example that we brought up previously with Red Rising.
Yeah.
It sometimes can feel like the Chosen One.
Yeah.
Because of certain aspects of the story. Talking about how because he's a red and he was bitten by the...
This is first chapter stuff.
Yeah, chapter stuff.
No spoilers here.
He's bitten by this snake that basically increases his heart's capacity, and he has stronger cardiovascular... He makes him special. And so when he can do all these other, like, it can sometimes feel that way of he feels special and unique and why he's in that position.
Yeah, because
chosen one.
Yeah, all of our protagonists, there has to be a special reason we're following their story. Mm-hmm. There's a reason we're following this character in this world at this specific time, or else there's no story to be told. Yeah. So Chosen One, there's several different types. One of the most popular that you love, prophecy.
Oh yeah. Well, I can love it. It's one of those things. It can be handled very poorly, very often.
I do want to mention this on tropes, just as broad discussion. Then we'll get micro. Okay, we're gonna let's go off on a little pivot here. Mm. I really dislike when people, you know how you were saying earlier, and you can double into this to be the antagonist of this episode, usual. You know,
I'll double down.
Yeah, double down.
People call me Double Down Rich.
Actually, no, you don't double down. You quadruple down. You say I'm not a negative Nancy. I'm a quadruple.
Quintuple sometimes.
Yeah. Now, a lot of tropes people get flagged, like, oh, that's such a trope. That's following a trope. People use the word trope a lot in replace of the word cliche. Cliche is the bad word. Cliche is, this is vapid. It's been done before. It's not providing anything new. It's specious. It looks good on the outside, but really, I've seen this a million times, done better a million times. Trope, every story you've ever read uses tropes. So when you see, I know you're not saying this, but with the prophecy, for example,
yeah,
you're saying that trope can be done incredibly, or it could seem cliche.
The accurate thing would be the chosen one cliche.
Yes.
Would be, would please you. That, that would, that word, that would please you.
Now we're on the same game. Okay. Okay? We're playing the same game now because no author doesn't use a trope. And maybe there's a weird thing out
there. There's some weird modern art bullshit that, like, it uses no tropes because it's nonsense.
It's a stick figure. Like, why did you draw a stick figure in a 500-page book? And that's all it is. Like, okay, yeah. Technically...
there's no tropes in here.
That's
you subverted my expectations.
You thoroughly disappointed me with your going off the beaten trail. But that's why authors use tropes, because they're both familiar and they work so well.
Yeah, it also kind of seems to be that there are only so many type of stories. Like, I don't know about you, but like the fact that tropes exist mean that there's not an infinite way to tell stories. There's a lot. There certainly is a lot. And there's a lot of variations within it. But the fact that a trope exists means that it is not an infinite... there's not infinite ways to tell stories.
There's infinite ways you can go in different avenues, but as far as a pattern goes,
like as a type,
where a plot archetype.
Same thing with music. Of there's potentially infinite amount of songs, but there's only so many notes.
Yeah,
and there's, you know, less notes than there are tropes and stories. But I think maybe it's something similar. Of there are only so many tropes and so many different types of stories that you can combine in different ways to come up with your own
new ideas,
story.
Yeah. I mean, that's the same for me to you, of where there's infinite ways to make fun of you, but mm-hmm. I go on the cliche bird and hair topic.
That's
because
true.
It works for the new people. The people that hear me make fun of your hair that have been here for a while are like, Austin, that's enough. It's kind of getting old. But the new person's like, ha, they'll get a chuckle time. And then
look at the balding man.
So funny. He made fun of physical appearance when he himself is also stupid and ugly. Like, you know, it's ironic back and forth because there's plenty of subject matter, both of us, but we always go to the same thing.
Well, there's also that's the one thing is there's jokes you can say off camera and on camera. We got off-camera jokes that those go deeper and, like, not appropriate.
Off-camera, it's not his hair. It's his pubic hair. Man, there's a lot of... not that I've seen it. So the chosen one. More fan fictions being created. So the trope itself is used everywhere. The chosen one trope, why people can drag on it a lot, is because it's so commonly used, you could see it, bad iterations of it, infinitesimally, because there's so many bad versions of this trope. But do you want to talk about, give me some pros, cons on your end. You can give me negative first if you'd like.
Sure.
Of when an author picks a chosen one tropes, what is a bad thing about that? Then we can go good. Well, why can that be bad and cliche ridden? What could be bad about the chosen one trope?
Often it removes tension. If it is predestined for them to save the day, then you stop wondering whether he's going to save the day or not. Of course, there's supposed to be a high tension scene, but they're the chosen one. They're supposed to win at the end of the day. So, of course, they win. I think that's what it really comes down to is the con is it can remove tension from many scenes and their story. And it feels like once you have find out the prophecy of their story, well, why bother reading? I already know the ending.
Would you say it's kind of like, hey, this protagonist is the protagonist because they're the protagonist? Like,
yeah.
They're the prophecy because it's kind of circular. Mm-hmm. You follow them because I told you to follow them. That sort of thing?
That's part of it. I think it's separate of... tension is... normally, you have to have some type of stakes. And the simplest one is if they're in a dangerous situation and you're worried about if they're going to make it out of that situation alive. There's tension there. But if you already know they're going to make it out, it's a little bit of loss of tension. And I think that's what the prophecy and the chosen one trope can do if done poorly.
Right. And then on the flip side, is there a way to make it very tense and have the stakes very high?
Oh, yeah. Plenty of great examples of instead of the prophecy just being about saving the day, you add in some other stuff that adds to the tension of, yeah, they're fated to save the world, but also lose everyone they care about. Well, okay, now we have a competing prophecy here. There's tension now when you're in a dangerous situation. You're not worried about particularly the main character, but you care because they could lose all the ones they love.
Even the personal stake, so looking at internally, if you're the Chosen One, and a lot of the Chosen One stories you'll see is now you have imposter syndrome, where I am destined to be this great person, but I think very little of myself. So the stakes can be just self-belief and self-defeating, and how can this be true of me? Did they choose the wrong one? Mm-hmm. Maybe they were wrong, because sometimes the Chosen One selected by a person comes. Sometimes it's an artifact. Sometimes it's just the book itself. There's a line in prophecy, and then this, you are the Chosen One. So it can create maybe a lot of tension and stakes in the beginning portion where, am I good enough? The internal conflict can really be there. And the external conflict of the stakes of you succeeding or failing and everybody around you can maybe immediately put a high-stakes situation of the world is at stake.
Sure. I think some of the cliche aspect of the Chosen One is when the Chosen One is the prophesized hero, and then the actual person themselves has that, I think, a limp or light version of imposter syndrome, and it's almost always the person is super humble and is like, oh, no, it couldn't be me. I'm just too good. And they have all these positive qualities and ultra humility of their, you know, they've been blessed with all these gifts and abilities because of their Chosen One, and yet they're always still humble and go like, oh, no, you're actually good. That's like the cliche stuff that is annoying.
Mm.
And it's all that stuff is kind of like the surface level, where if you dive into it a little deeper and give it a little bit more meat, it actually can be good.
Do you know some of the Chosen One stories you dislike? Do you have a couple out there?
Oh, I can give just a whole genre if you don't mind.
Do it. Bash on the genre.
Isekai.
Ah.
Anime, manga, isekai, 97% of them is Chosen One bullshit stuff. Most of them are dog shit. Most of them. There's some good stuff in there.
Now, I don't think I've ever read an isekai or a manga.
You don't need to.
But there's got to be one that's great.
Oh, yeah. There's some. There's some that's good. There's some that's good.
But
some
mostly bad. Funny.
Honestly, at this point, the ones that are good because they make fun of the genre at this point. There are good ones out there, but like most of the parody ones are funny.
It's kind of like that end of a genre where superhero movies are getting there. I think we've talked about this in a past episode, but where the genre gets so, there's certain times with Westerns and superhero movies, they just get overclogged in in the pop culture, that it gets to a point where you have to start making fun of the genre for it to be new and exciting, like Deadpool.
Yeah.
At first, you can have your Iron Man in 2008, your Spider-Man in the early 2000s, and you can have all these superhero movies, but then it gets burned out a little bit. Now we kind of want to do the counterculture. Now we need a Deadpool to make fun of this. Now we kind of need what's the one with the guy that can changes from small kid into big superhero? Shazam, that one.
Oh,
makes fun of it. So now you kind of have these counter genres to...
Yeah, that's generally the cycle of art and genres.
And hey, just with the Chosen One trope, with one of the classic stories in the Chosen One trope of what I think we can really get into with prophecies, and something I want to jump into. Actually, before I go too deep, let me stay a little surface layer, because I want to talk about free will, determinism, all that. But I'll segue into that by first saying that an author can choose the Chosen One trope, and it could be a very good one to start with, because a lot of the times, especially us kiddos, when I was growing up, YA, read a bunch of that, you want to read a protagonist where you can live vicariously and feel special. Yeah. And Chosen One is an automatic ingredient to go, hey, this person's special, and we all like to think in our lives, wait, I got something special too.
It's wish fulfillment. It's wish fulfillment. And actually, that's the exact reason why most isekai manga and anime out there is successful, yet also bad. It's mostly wish fulfillment. Like, a lot of it is wish fulfillment. Anyone in comments going like, oh, you're wrong, there's actually good ones. Yeah, there are. But you have to wade through just a metric fuck ton of shit to find the good stuff at the top. Like, all the Konosubas you've read or watched, or honestly, it's hard to think of a isekai that's good. ReZero, I guess, was good. That was a good one. You haven't read or watched the dog shit that, like, is names that you don't know and can never pronounce. Just dog shit.
I have no idea these words you're using sometimes, but I do it's know fine. One person out there was typing on their computer, as you say, and whoever's talking shit in the comments, and then just pulled their hands away. I hope there's one.
I know there's one person out there. I hope there is, and I know there will be, because, you know, anime fans, they're energized a lot.
We actually do you think that those people are all welcome into our Patreon?
They are, but we do books.
Just to clarify, hey, our book club on Patreon, quick plug for that, is we do fantasy books.
Fantasy, sci-fi
books. Sci-fi books.
Sometimes we branch out a little bit, but that's what we do. We're not an anime.
We're not going into the manga
discussion.
We will not be tempted by the views.
That's something else.
We will stay strong. Can we stay? We will.
We will stay strong.
We will stay strong.
We will stay strong.
But join our Patreon. Link in the description below. Read a book every month with us. Yeah.
One of these days, I do want to get you to read Berserk. Just for fun. That's just going to be our thing. And I'm just going to torture you with that.
Okay.
Like, you're going to be traumatized after reading it and go, oh, this is why Japan has problems. This is generational trauma put into a, like, some sick fuck has to... you have to be a messed up motherfucker to write Berserk.
And that's the one you want me to read.
Yes, that's exactly
fitting.
It.
Very fitting.
No, I want you to go, oh, Game of Thrones was tame. Oh, Lord. Like, anything America has ever come up with, tame. Tame, compared to what sick shit comes out of Japan.
Jesus. You could tell that the health of a culture based on their stories.
Yeah, and we should be concerned about them. We need to do a wellness check on the country every Japan. Once in a while. Yeah. Sometimes it's like, they need some help.
But this is all about wish fulfillment. So Berserk, is that a wish fulfillment story?
No.
Oh, okay.
Opposite.
Okay.
It's wish fulfilling, and I'm so happy that I'm not this person.
Got it.
It makes me very happy.
Got it.
That I'm not there.
So your chosen one, maybe your anti-hero chosen one as well, could be that flip side of, oh, it's... they're the chosen one, but they're in such a dark path, I would never want to be in their shoes. Randall Thor.
Yeah.
Wheel of Time.
Great. Dune with Paul Atreides.
Dune with Paul Atreides. Kind of have your darker twist to this chosen one prophecy.
Yeah, the prophecy is not all sunshine and rainbows.
Right. And the two ways, or there's probably more than this, but the couple ways you see a prophecy unfold, where you have... A lot of chosen ones have prophecies. Some of them isn't more direct out, here's a quote, here's a prophecy you must fulfill, but a lot do. Wheel of Time has one. Mm-hmm. Several.
Right? A lot.
So, which one day I'll get to. It'll be...
No, you won't.
No, I won't.
No, you won't.
No, I lied through my teeth. The one that I hope to get to.
There's a weird setting I think of. I read Wheel of Time early into reading a bunch of fantasy, so I got to benefit from, like, all the tropes in Wheel of Time were sort of fresh and new to me. But now that I've read other stuff, it's like, yeah, I can see them a lot easier. It's not as new and fresh.
Right.
Maybe, you know, your horseshoe theory of, like, you go through enough stuff, then you finally come back to, like, yeah, it is full of tropes. But I've seen them all, and it's done well here, and so I enjoy it. Maybe one day you'll come.
Maybe
you'll come around.
I'll be like you're saying. You're just saying that Wheel of Time does the trope the best.
Where you won't be looking for something new and fresh. You'll just be looking for something nice.
Old and dull.
Something good.
And boring.
Yeah. I'm going to restraint. Restraint.
You were supposed to be the antagonist this episode.
Restraint.
You're making me the villain.
Oh, okay.
No. I'll double down into the villain.
Double down?
You're not all fulfilling right. your role. But what was it? Oh, prophecies.
Yes.
Prophecies.
Yep. Perfection. Randall Thor.
Yes.
Perfect exactly. stories. Yes. Uh-huh.
It never has a flaw.
Never flaw. Flawless. Flawless
way,
fiction.
The way you usually see a prophecy is the prophecy can be something that you read and it's like, oh, that's something good and is going to happen in the world. And you go, prophecy can be written out like, hey, destined to do this. And whatever that prophecy is, it happens in a way that our character or the reader doesn't expect. Like, it says, oh, it could say, you will bring balance to the force. Oh, good. Balance is good. I like balance. That seems good. And then by actual balance, they mean Anakin's going to kill all the Jedi because that's what brings balance. The Jedi were too powerful. That's actual balance. So you're like, oh.
Yeah.
that's not what I signed up for. Like, that's one way of doing it. And by the way, I'm weaving in all this information here. Again, Sarcastic Productions and other YouTube videos talking about these tropes. So this isn't original for me. I am being cliche and tropish of other talking points to give more information and convince.
We're filling our role. We're parasites.
We are parasites, and we are just here, and I'm talking this through, you know? Because then on the flip side, that could be a prophecy that is that you're trying to avoid, actively trying to avoid. One of the examples of this is Oedipus.
Yes.
Oedipus, the classic story of Oedipus, where a father sees this prophecy that his son will kill him, so the son will kill his father and marry his mother. So the father goes out of his way and orphans the child, sends the child away because he wants to prevent this prophecy from happening, does everything he can. The orphan child grows up, is a teen or whatever, a boy, and then finds out about this prophecy and goes, well, I don't want to marry my mother and kill my father, so I'm going to leave. Leaves what he doesn't know of his orphan parents. So leaves his orphan parents and happens to run into his biological father, kills, and biological mother who he falls in love with, thus fulfilling his prophecy all along when trying to avoid fate.
And then cuts out his eyes and wanders the world. Yeah.
Nice fitting story. The Greeks. Oh, if there's anybody in more trouble than the Japanese.
Oh, 100%.
It's ancient Greece.
They are a chief example of my point of they needed some wellness checks real early on.
Yeah, I got to say, though, on the Japan's really pulled. They're doing great, I think, in many regards. Like, sure, there's the work culture and a lot of the stresses and suicide. I get what you're talking about there.
Drastically declining population. Yeah, they're wiping themselves out of the gene pool.
All I got to say, Rich, is they're making some great cinema.
Hey, they make excellent rice cookers. I got, like, only buy a Japanese rice cooker.
And cars. Their cars are fantastic.
Cars pretty good.
They're fantastic.
Better than American.
Great cars, yes.
Most of them.
Yep.
Though that's not a high
and
bar.
And you got to give some credit. Got to give some credit to, like, they recovered from World War II. Like, come on. In a 60, 70-year span, they're doing a lot better than they were in the 30s and 40s. Let's just say that. Got to give them a little up.
They're doing better than that. That's
true. Let's just say they're more moral than they were in the 30s and 40s. They're doing...
We're not a history channel. We're going to get into some controversy there of going like, you know, Japan World War II is... everyone hears the Nazis and goes like, oh, Nazis, awful, terrible. Of course.
Avoid at all costs.
Avoid at all costs.
Of course, that is true.
That is
very true.
Don't try and clip me. Don't go Nazis
on us. Nazis bad.
Nazis bad. However, I just feel my history class would have done, it would have been good. It would have behooved them to spend, instead of, you know, 99% of the time on Nazis, of, you know, cut out a chunk, maybe spend 80% of the time on the Nazis. And give us, like, you know, 15 to 20%.
No, 20. Mussolini. We don't need to talk about him. He brings bad name to my Italian culture. Forget Mussolini. Forget him. But Japan.
There's some awful shit there. Oh Lord! Like, the Nazis were freaked out at how awful they were. Like that. That's it. There's actual reports of, like, Nazi soldiers and correspondents going like, wait, the Japanese did what? What the fuck are they doing? The Japanese sometimes made the Nazis look
actually a good
more tame.
A story.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Beat that I love is when you meet the villain character and this villain character looks at the higher villain character horrified and, like, the bigger boss is way more monstrous and harder to defeat and worse than the smaller mini boss.
Yeah.
And it's kind of one of those things of what, you know how awful the Nazis are, and then there's, wait a second. It's that story beat of, wait, you just gave me plot one stuff? Like, you just gave me, that was act one? What? Anyways, okay, History Channel aside.
Yeah, no.
Where was that tangent off of?
No, I just, I love it. There's some weird history shit of like the fact
we
that
should, it would be cool if we got read a little bit more history books too.
It'd be nice.
It would
like,
be.
I was reading a story on how like there was a single battle of which the Nazis and the American soldiers mm-hmm. actually worked together and were allies for one battle.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Is it kind of not like this, but I know in World War One was it they had an armistice for a day for Christmas or something?
Oh, no.
Was something different than
no,
that?
No. The Americans and the Nazis allied together to fight toward the end of the war to fight against the SS. Because the SS were like the Nazis, not good. Not good Nazis. SS, or like basically all like the horrible, wicked shit, all the Nuremberg trials, that's mostly the SS. And basically the SS were trying to go into this prison and execute a bunch of political prisoners. And toward the end of the war, like kind of just retribution, I'm like, oh, we're going to lose. We're going to kill all these political prisoners. And so basically the Nazis were like, oh, shit, this is not a good idea. Like, the war's already done. Like, why the fuck are we doing this? And they barricaded the prison against the Nazis and called for the Americans' help. Ooh. And so the Americans, they barricaded the entrance to prison with a tank. And it was Americans and Nazis working together, like, on the walls of this prison, shooting against the SS soldiers that were trying to invade it. So the Americans and Nazis were allied for one battle.
That's a little wholesome.
It's interesting. It's incredibly fascinating.
The SS did not see that coming. Sorry.
I love puns.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyone who says that, like, a groan's in a pun, you're just immature and you're afraid.
You're afraid of the laugh.
You're afraid of being unique because you're a sheep. Anyone who groans, like people that groan at puns, mm-hmm. they groan because that's apparently what everyone else does. They're following the herd. You know you laugh deep down. You know it's funny. It's creative and witty. And the reason you groan is because you didn't think of it. That's why.
I mean, I've heard that. That was the first time I've heard the Nazi.
I know. I'm defending you.
Oh, thank you.
Shut up.
Okay. the one time, it's just I'm so unused to support. I'm like, wait a second. No, bring me Richard back. Bring me back.
Anyway, history thing aside. Now, oh God.
I think our
time. I was like, who was the chosen one in World War II?
Churchill, please.
Honestly, maybe the Americans. Just because of like.
The strange
thing. When the world needed them most,
they vanished.
They vanished.
And then came back.
They come back to save the day.
We are Avatar The Last Airbender. We are Aang.
Exactly.
Did you hear us at Aang? I meant Aang.
Careful.
We are Aang and the Soviet Union. Well, see, the thing is, the Soviet Union.
The Soviet Union is the Earth Kingdom because they took the biggest beating. Because, you know, in Avatar The Last Airbender, Earth Kingdom is basically the one that is mostly conquered and they've been beaten to an inch of their life. They're the ones that suffer the casualties.
It makes perfect sense that the UK is the water nation, the water tribe.
Exactly.
Because they have their island area and they.
But they're a little isolated.
The half of them gone, like destruction. But. They're still there, and they're kicking barely.
Now, what comes into play is, like, the Air Nation was wiped out, and Americans were like, we're good, because we're so far away. And, like, they bombed, like, I don't know, in terms of global conflict, it's like, they bombed Pearl Harbor. And that's about it. That's about all they did to people on American soldiers. And then we just, you know, yep, that's enough. Let's wipe them all out. It's great. Great, by the way. Good thing we did. But in terms of which country suffered the most, America is definitely on that list.
Oh, the suffering tier?
Suffering tier.
Oh, arguably the Soviet Union.
Not arguably. Soviet Union is top of that list. Well, the amount of people suffering.
Oh, no, I was going to say like the civilians of Germany too is real bad. The civilians of the UK. You get what I mean? There's a lot, arguably meaning Soviet Union, a lot of deaths. But then you have...
A lot of death from the Germans, but also more Soviet generals and commanders just
war-wise.
Hey, we're out of bullets, but if we keep throwing soldiers at the Germans, they're eventually going to run out of bullets. That's not a great side to fight for. I wouldn't want to be a Soviet soldier.
You know who the chosen one was? I know that we didn't have a dog that fought in World War II?
I mean,
We had several, but we had that one dog that got a Medal of Honor or something that just saved like a bunch of people.
I think I remember something like that.
Best Boy gets, he's the chosen one of the story. That's what we learned.
That's the lesson
of
the story.
I'm just trying to tie us back into the conversation.
Yeah, we're not a history channel. That's not good.
No.
This is just us.
I think all of that was completely accurate, by the way.
Sure. I will loosely stand behind what I said.
Very loosely.
Very loosely.
Well, that came from prophecy. Oedipus. Weren't we talking about Oedipus right before?
Yes.
How the hell did we get there?
Basically, the Greeks are really fucked up. Oh, and you know who else is fucked up? The 30, Japanese.
In the 30s. And
yeah.
Then got it.
There we go.
That's how we got there. Oedipus. The whole thing. Trying to not fulfill fate and prophecy. And then you end up getting, you can't avoid it. That getting to the deeper topic of the themes that I love about the Chosen One trope.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you have your character conflict of not thinking they're good enough and imposter syndrome. Those could be great stories to overcome and battle with internal conflict. But then the deeper part of Oedipus and these stories of fate and the whole conversation about free will versus determinism. And Rich, I know you love to juice up those topics.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how would you differ free will from determinism? How would you define both of those? And you see how the Chosen One trope is crucial to this message, because in these Chosen One stories, in Dune...
It's determinism. So the whole idea of free will is pretty self-explanatory, that people's actions are determined by their own will and nothing is predestined, and that we are what... like, our future is what we make it, basically. Determinism is saying that basically because... there is, because we are chemicals and everything is a action reaction, that you kind of can go down the line. This is more metaphysical shit, but like our desires are not even our own. We didn't choose our desires. Our desires are a combination of our genetics and our social upbringing. And so therefore we didn't choose those. That's what our biology and our brain makeup and our history makes of us. So is that desire even
a
your
will
choice?
Of our own?
That isn't even a will of our own. So you take that further back of everything is just a sequence of events that are outside of your own control, and there is no free will. That's effectively it.
A loop of cause and effect, then cause and effect, then cause and effect. Yeah.
In that loop, there's no room for your own will.
Even our conversation here would be, I'm only responding to what you just said, because you said that the reason you said that is because of your education, and walking back from your education is your parents, who hardly love you, gave you that education, and then your parents are here because, well, they said, well, we might as well have a kid.
Might as well. Yeah.
Turns out this one. Eh.
And I mean, imagine the actual reaction of, like, you know, your nanny, you're growing up, and your grandmother, like, loving you and then realizing that, oh, you can't actually eat her cooking because you're lactose intolerant, and how much you disappoint her, and that, like, all these things are outside of your control, but of course
it's determined. You know, if my grandmother was here, that's not my nanny's my Italian grandmother.
Yeah, different grandmother than was on the channel.
Yeah, my grandma that was here on the channel, we united a couple times that episode against you.
Oh, good.
Just to let you know,
I haven't watched it all yet.
Good.
I probably should.
So that whole conversation, what I love about Chosen One trope is you can go character level. And a lot of what fantasy books do is they explore the character. That's why you see a lot of Chosen One tropes with that. What Dune does, they explore that Chosen One trope. It's less about characters, but sci-fi can get more philosophical and get you to a point about human nature and morals and metaphysical things that go beyond character journey that is based on emotions and a character arc, whereas this theme of fate that is ever present in all of these Chosen One stories is always neat to look at. How does the author take it? What do they have to say about free will? What do they have to say about determinism? Because there's two answers there, but the way you can go about answering it can always be creative and a great theme to make your book stick with you and leave you with a thought-provoking message. And this Chosen One trope is an easy way to do that, of showing you that. And it starts to make you think, like, hey, are things outside of your control? Or do you have control over it? Or does it matter? You can go so many different avenues. You like that in stories.
Oh, no. I think a reason why the Chosen One trope can grate on me a little bit is when the concept of fate is made and predeterminism is already established, and then it's not dived into a, like, that's a pretty horrifying thing to think about. Of it basically removes free will. That's a horrifying thing. And the fact that there's no consequence, no one thinks further about that, that's the concerning thing, and more annoys me with stories if they don't address it at all. The fact that there's a prophecy, and like, how does that affect everyone? The reason why I like Wheel of Time is it wrestles with the concept of people understand that there is a prophecy. Prophecy is a real thing. There is actual fate. Time is a loop. Like, it is, everyone knows that there is limited free will. If you are free at all, how does that affect society? How does it affect individual characters? Like, that has consequences.
Mm.
And so it's fun because it's different from our own world, because ultimately, whether there is free will or not, we operate in the West with the presumption that free will does exist. Our legal system is based on it. Basically, our stories, our history, how we operate day to day, how we treat others is under the assumption that free will does exist.
You could see determinism in a way, would you say, that it almost removes agency of, it wasn't me that decided to do it. It was a history of cause and effects that made me do this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hey, that also gets back to a lot of more political debates I have with friends of, like, politically speaking, how do you judge someone if all of their actions are predetermined? And it gets kind of messy of how do you even judge someone if they're not the ones that actually made the decision, that it was their society, it was their genetics, it was XYZ. It takes away agency.
Nature and nurture, everything led them to do in this moment.
And if our justice system is to blame the individual, it's like, well, it's not entirely their fault. And I don't know if that's a particularly great way to operate under, because I know personally, like, I operate under free will existing, that people are responsible for their own decisions, that there are factors that include and influence them, but ultimately, you are the master of your own decisions. Operating any differently is destructive.
I think the difference there, I was looking into this a bit, where that concept of free will, you're believing that, can your will be generated almost out of thin air? Can it be uncaused, do you believe? Yeah. You can kind of make a will of your own that is not determined by any other factor other than your own fruition to do that.
Logically speaking, there's not really much of an argument there. I think determinism and the idea that free will doesn't exist is actually very logical. It makes the most sense, and yet I don't believe it.
Yeah, that's the whole thing when looking into these philosophies of the argument for free will is, well, I feel that I do have free will.
It comes down to
emotion of, does free will exist? Well, I feel that it does. And then logically, when you go down the logic train of, well, this and you can write it out. That's why you see a lot of physicists who look at the world of cause and effects. And Einstein was a determinist, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I'll fact check and I'll cut this out if I'm wrong. I'm going to double check. But Einstein was a determinist because of this principle, cause and effect. And he's smarter than me.
Logically, it makes, there's a lot of things that logic will get you so far.
But you can logic your way
into a lot of horrifying things, mm-hmm. and a lot of moral presuppositions that I don't think are pleasant for polite society, ultimately. And so, but when it breaks down to it, like, I've wrestled with that of going like, oh, logically speaking, free will doesn't exist because of our entire lives, everything is a cause and chain, like a chain of cause and effect. But ultimately, that's not a good way to live your life, like believing that you have no agency and no choice. And then also, I don't believe it. Like, if you truly believe that way, then you would operate differently. But I still choose to operate and live my life like I have free will. Therefore, I do. Like, that's one of those things of, I can't logic my way into that belief. Because if I believe that way, I would behave differently. And the fact that I don't behave differently means I don't believe it's real.
And the predeterminism is also always in hindsight of, let's say you have the choice right now to pick a number 1 to 100. And let's say you change your mind 20 times. Yeah. Predeterminately, you could say, like, oh, well, you changed your mind to this number and this number and this number and this number and this because you had to. You were determined to. It was your fate to go to that number.
Mm-hmm.
When you're saying also in practical matters, well, I could pick any number. It can come out of my own free will. I can stand up and lead this podcast right now, which a predeterminist would say, well, because we're talking about predeterminism, you decided to do that. It's almost logically, it's not a defeating argument because you can't disprove determinism in that sense. Yeah. It's not like, oh, this, because it's not tangible. But in the same way, you can't.
It comes round to it. Yeah, you can't disprove it, but you can't prove it.
Yeah.
Because I personally think of it. I think for free will to exist, you have to acknowledge the idea of a soul. Because without it, then we are just a bunch of chemical mechanisms that are going back and forth that are operating off of genetics and societal basis, like all that stuff.
Which, once you get into hyper-skepticism, that's a logical conclusion as well.
Exactly.
Because if nothing exists, and then you just get very reductionist about it, or the opposite of reductionism, because you get... I think that is reductionism. Yeah, you're going down the alley. So when it comes to free will, it's, hey, I feel exists, and I will operate that way. And you know what? My personal opinion on the matter, whether free will exists or determinism exists, I like what Marcus Aurelius, the Stoic, has to say. The best
philosopher that wouldn't classify himself as a philosopher.
Let the philosophers philosophize. I will just live my life. That I joke about that because the topics like free will and determinism are so hyper fascinating that this is why stories are amazing. Because even if I could be very staunchly on one side of things and be like, free will is the only way. Maybe I was a hyper determinist and I went, I'm a hardliner, everything's determined. But books can always explore an avenue of that in a new, creative, unique way that will give you that new perspective of going, oh, I didn't see it like that. Because I bet when you read Wheel of Time, there were nuggets there that made you think differently.
Even more so than Wheel of Time. I'm excited because you now raised it on your TBR.
What's that?
You're going to be reading Lacanus Trilogy.
Oh, I just finished The Will of the Many. Fuck yeah, that was good. Review coming. Yes.
Lacanus Trilogy dives really well into free will and determinism.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent, by the way. Like that, it explores that topic to the degree that we are looking for.
Mm.
Highly recommend, by the way. Just get through the first two books. I promise you book three is worth it. I promise you. I won't stand behind the first two books, but book three is a masterpiece. It's all my piece. I just have to caveat it. I promise you it's worth it. I know it's a lot of pages.
I can't wait to read it. My next read's going to be Mistborn.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go through that. I know I haven't read Mistborn yet. I will.
It's pretty sad.
I'll be doing that.
Big Sanderson fan. Hasn't read Mistborn.
I'm not even a fake fan.
Fake fan.
But that is the most fascinating part about the Chosen One trope, because other than that, are there any more interesting layers and themes that it explores, or is that the main one you see?
I think definitely the best one is the idea of free will.
That one.
And exploring that with the Chosen One, there's, I think... You expand on, first there's, how does that main character react to being the Chosen One and basically wrestling with the idea of fate, and that no matter what they chose, their life is going in a certain direction and they can't stop it. Like, that's the internal conflict. What I find also equally interesting is externally, how does the idea of fate and prophecy affect society and people surrounding that individual? That is also interesting. That's where
the wheel wills.
Oh, yeah. And Wheel of Time takes in the more fantasy route. Dune takes it the more manipulation and sci-fi-ish fun route. But both take a look at how society would react to a prophesized individual.
Right. So it's not just the free will determinist of that person, but of society.
Because, imagine you are... Like, we all have our heroes in today's world, but... Imagine if we actually had heroes and leaders that quite literally they fit a prophecy of hero and legend. That's different.
Well,
we've never had that. We operate some things like
Here's a prophecy.
I don't want to give examples because, again...
Here's a clear example, too. Whether you're religious or not, Jesus...
Sure.
...is prophesized. So whether you believe in Jesus or don't believe in Jesus, it is either a real or fictional story, mm-hmm. depending on the viewer or the reader, of a fictionalized or true character that was prophesized to do this from the Old Testament to New, and here you go.
Now, that Jesus Christ is an interesting thing of... I believe it is, I think it's a fundamentally Christian thing, the idea of free will. And yet it is also a thing full of prophecy and fate and things like that. And isn't that fascinating, actually? Isn't that an interesting
That's really interesting.
Like,
yeah.
Talked about it with friends of mine of like, because I think it's more atheist. Friends? Yeah, I know.
You talk to other people?
All the time. More preferably other people.
Go on.
Well, thing is, you won't smoke a cigar with me out.
Yeah, that's right. That's
the best time for religious debate.
I'll join you for those, but then the smoke gets to me and I walk back in.
I got to get you into cigars.
You heard it here first. He's trying to get me into nicotine.
It's great. I found a cigar bar, like a cigar lounge near my new place. I'm excited.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
I'll be there for you for the cigars and for the lung cancer.
Good. Good. And it's not how cigars work. You'll be there for...
You puff it out. Yeah.
You'll be there for my mouth cancer.
The mouth cancer.
Exactly.
Let me get my nicotine, my types of cigarettes. Cigars correct. I'm not in the culture. Sorry.
Yeah, just...
One of the cancers you'll have. I'm going to lose
my gums and teeth.
Your hair's already gone.
My lungs are going to be great. My lungs are fine. It's everything else.
It's horrible.
But yeah... I think that's the most important factor with The Chosen One, but do you think there are any other smaller aspects that is fun to explore and what makes it important? Because we talked a little bit briefly of like the one level, and it's more surface level. It's often seen as not as literary important. It's kind of looked down on. It's the wish fulfillment aspect because everyone wants to feel like the hero, and it's comforting. Instead of the hard thing of making yourself the hero and the world is indifferent to you and we are what we make of it and there's no clear path. The world doesn't have an answer. There is no ending. There's just living. And so it's nice of you read a story where it's prophesized. There's a clear story. There's a clear main character and an ending, and that's cathartic to us because that means there's meaning and order. Versus our own chaotic, nonsensical lives.
It makes us more self-important. Mm-hmm. Our mini school unimportant lives now have some sort of grandiose, vicariously living through this person who's doing something that, I do feel special. I think the thing not to undercut with a theme that I really like is even if you could live through this other character and you like to see another character that's special and they're following them, and it gives you more hope. Maybe not. You just like to escape and you want to read a story like this. But that level of imposter syndrome, I think you can get really good as far as a character journey goes. A lot of the Chosen One tropes can focus on the external and the fate and those really fast, thought-provoking things. But on this flip side, the same message can be that internal conflict of you feeling not enough, you feeling displaced. And imagine we can all relate again vicariously. We can relate in our sense of we feel that we're not enough, whether it's to our jobs, our life, our hobbies, our relationships, our activities. We can always feel not enough in every regard so that when someone's prophesized to do something, you could see how all those human emotions are tenfold of, wait a second, it's not just you feel lackluster because you didn't make your bed this morning and you're kind of a mess and you're a slog and, you know, you're just sitting doing a podcast weekly and you're just kind of stuck.
It makes you feel that there's... It's in some way good motivation of feeling like you are meant for greater things is a great way to get up out of bed in the morning.
And you're self-conscious about having the laptop out during the pods.
I mean,
and you just want to reach out to a friend, but every now and then he just sits across from you judgingly all the time.
Yeah, typically. I mean, it would suck to be that person. And imagine on top of all that they can't have pizza.
And then you have almost a sad life. You're nearing 30,000 subscribers, but you wouldn't even subscribe to yourself.
Oh, yeah.
It's just you feel out of place. you feel like you're an imposter living and someone else is like, I don't deserve this. This isn't me. I didn't earn this.
Oh,
and then you feel like
you give it the real example of imposter, imposter with Arch Ale. It's like going,
Rich, semi-real, by the way.
Oh, no, the real thing like going, oh, man, you guys have like close to 30,000 subscribers. Isn't that great?
That's awesome.
And then you look at like the actual channel analytics and you go, yeah, like I think half of those are short subscribers and not actual people that watch our videos. And so our views are like much lower in comparison to the amount of subscribers we have. So like it's like, oh man, you guys are one of the big dogs. You're like 30,000 subscribers. Like realistically, should probably like take shorts out, probably have like 15,000, maybe 12.
Solid 12. Solid.
Like realistically speaking, numbers wise,
staunch 12.
If we take out the inflated numbers, we actually have like 12,000.
We're just a facade,
exactly.
Trying to be more self-important.
We're imposters.
Yeah,
yeah. But we get to sit with the big dogs and people, you know, go on other people's channels.
They see big number.
We get to go on YouTubers' channels that have technically less subscribers than us. But they get way more views than us.
They're better than us.
Because
views.
But they go, wow, you guys are doing great. We're like, yeah.
If you guys know Ludwig, bigger number, better person.
That is true. That's how it works.
It is. The more people that watch
democracy,
the more people that vote for you.
Exactly.
The better you are, right?
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
People don't get it that your internet personalities, the more people that are actually watching them, it means 100% true that they're morally better people. That's how, like, and when you're talking and you're thinking about important things and what to do with your life, you should value the people that are on your screen.
You should go to
find the person who has the most eyeballs and has the most attention and then take their opinion for everything.
That History Channel you're looking at that has 20,000 subscribers, we have more, and we just talked about World War II. So when you look at which statement to see as true, you come to the BookTube channel.
That's because about fantasy democracy is true.
True.
Democracy makes truth.
It does, actually.
Of course.
The will of the many.
Or, democracy is cringe. If you disagree with what we were saying, then you agree. Democracy is cringe. It should mostly be eliminated and left to small, unimportant things.
And I think that you, Richard, this whole episode, were predetermined to say that. We will see you all next week.
Bye.